When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant sitting across from me, back in the saddle. And this is Stuff You Should Know. Yo.
Back in the saddle, eh?
Yeah.
You want to explain that? Or should we just leave it a mystery?
A saddle?
No, well.
What the metaphorical saddle is in this case?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have been kind of away, even though it seems like we've been here every week.
I know.
Through the magic of digital recording.
That's right, pre-recording.
We batch recorded our episodes and covered ourselves. We built up what we call a kitty.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been releasing them steadily and faithfully while we've been off recording a TV show.
Recording a TV show, that's right.
Our own TV show where, and Yumi pointed this out to me, how cool this is, we play ourselves.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing I'm qualified to do as
an actor. Yeah, totally. We would have failed miserably if we'd done, you know,
anything else.
Like a Sherlock Holmes update or something like that.
Oh, there's so many of those going on already.
I know, so why not us?
Yeah, why not? Elementary,
yeah,
my dear Clark.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a TV show coming out. I guess we can talk about it freely. We're done.
Yeah, we'll really ramp up the pluggage come December, but look for it in January on Science Channel.
Yep. And if you don't have Science Channel, go out and purchase Science Channel.
Yeah, and we do not know, because I know people are already asking about online stuff, if they're going to be available, like, you know, through various media outlets online.
Yeah.
We don't know yet. And we're working on that. We'd love for it to, but it's not up to us.
Yeah, so I mean, you have to hedge your bets and
get Science Channel.
Yes, add it to your cable subscription. And if your cable provider doesn't offer Science Channel, you burn down their offices.
That's right.
Until they do.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. So Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a little movie called Twilight?
Yeah, I've seen all those.
You've seen them?
Oh yeah. Emily's read the books, and she's way into it, so I have been sucked into it.
That is very supportive of you.
I don't think they're very good, but I must admit, I do want to see the final one, just because it's like when you watch four of something, or however many it's been, three of something,
mm-hmm.
it'd just be kind of weird to stop there.
Gotcha.
So I will see the last one.
When does that come out?
I think probably sometime around this published date.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's a Thanksgiving or Christmas release.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I bring that up to propose that that's the only time we talk about that franchise throughout this whole
okay,
podcast.
Sure.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Because vampires, which is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They go back a very, very, very long way.
Yeah.
They've evolved. They've changed. They've shifted their shape. But they seem to all have certain characteristics in common, right?
Yeah.
For example, they can't see their own reflection.
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
If we go back to the ancient myths.
Okay. They are wary of crucifixes. Crucifixes.
Yeah.
They only come out at night.
Yeah, they're the undead.
Yeah.
Suck blood from a victim's neck.
They have to be invited into your home.
Yeah, garlic as well, holy water.
Yeah.
Superhuman strength, all tenets of the modern vampire lore.
Yes, and modern is a good, it's a good way to put it, because all of this is a fairly recent image of the vampire,
yep,
thanks to Bram Stoker, and then shortly after that, Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
We now have this conception of the vampire. But like I said, it goes back way, way further than the 19th century or even the 18th century.
Whoa.
Yeah. It goes back as much as 4,000 years as far as we know, and probably further back, right?
Yeah. And I will say one thing, not to bring up the T word again, but Bram Stoker and other authors and filmmakers, the cool thing I like about the vampire in pop culture is you can pull from all these different things to create your own creature of the night.
Yes.
Like some of them, you know, in like True Blood, for instance. You know, they can retract their fangs. They're super sexy. They, you know, Lilith is in that.
A
version of Lilith that we'll talk about.
Okay.
So I just think that's kind of one of the cool things about vampires is Bram Stoker did the same thing. He pulled from different areas of mythology and said, this is a fictional character I'm going to create using all these old folk legends.
Right, but there are some things that are very basic. The commonalities among all vampires is that generally they suck blood.
Yeah.
And they are dead in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, undead.
They are. They're undead. That's a great way to, you just coined an excellent term.
Yeah, just made that up.
So you have undead people, former people in most cases, feeding on the living. That's the vampire. It's the basis of almost all vampires.
Yes.
But even that has exceptions because the earliest vampires that we know of that arose out of the first civilization, Mesopotamia, were actually demon goddesses, right?
Yeah. Lamastu
mm-hmm.
was a demon goddess, and she was the daughter of Anu, the sky god.
Yeah.
And she would creep in and kill your babies.
Yes, she was not a happy, nice person. She had talons, wings.
Yeah.
And they believe that the Assyrians and Babylonians were basically going like, what is going on when they would encounter sudden infant death syndrome?
Yeah.
Or miscarriages. And they said, well, of course it is
Lamastu.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's so funny how so many of these things were sort of used to explain, and not vampires, but all kinds of folk legends, to explain, like, what medicine now says is SIDS.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, I mean, like, it's this basis of the vampire legend, using it to explain stuff people didn't understand.
Yeah.
Usually some sort of sudden death or a wasting away, as we'll see later. It spans thousands of years. People have been going back to that well for thousands and thousands of years.
True.
That's pretty interesting.
Agreed.
You know, when you look at this one group in the 19th century with the Assyrians 4,000 years ago,
yeah,
and they're all thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting. That's an archetype, if you ask Jung.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you we're all humans all over the world for as long as we've been around.
We're all stupid.
We're all stupid. All right, Lamastu is also associated with Lilith, who I mentioned, who this past season was on True Blood,
yeah,
like a version of Lilith. But she is prominent in Jewish texts and is a lot like Lamastu. She was the first woman, supposedly.
Yeah.
Not Eve, but Adam and Lilith.
Yeah, that's like that question about, like, who was the first president?
Yeah. Well, apparently there were other presidents before Washington.
There were like
right?
8 or 9 before Washington, but you just have to say, well, were they the president of the United States?
Right.
No, they weren't.
Right. So Lilith was a modern woman, and she was like, you know, Adam, I ain't putting up with this because I am just the same as you. I was created from God just like you are.
Yeah.
And so.
Stop acting like you're not made of dust.
Exactly. So she left Eden, said, I'm out of here. I'm going to go have my own kids.
Yeah.
God sends angels to bring her back. She's like, no, I'm not going. And the angel said, all right, you think angels are nice? We're going to kill 100 of your children every day until you get back up to Eden or heaven.
Yeah. And rather than say, okay, well, let's go back to Eden, then Lilith said, do it. And they did it. And so she started killing human children in return.
That's right. Again, with sharp talons, a winged demoness, stealing infants and fetuses.
And I find that extremely interesting. That the vampire legend is kind of born out of this this folklore of how you're supposed to be subservient to men.
Right.
You know? That's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because there's this element of seduction that kind of was reinvented with vampires here or there. But it's one of the, it may have gone away in some areas, but it always came back. This idea that there was a woman or a person who didn't follow sexual mores.
True.
Whether that sexual meaning like intercourse or gender.
Yeah.
They didn't follow the rules. And that's kind of like another thing that's always kept the vampire legend going, or that's always been a part of it, I guess.
That's a good point. Because Lilith does set up the notion of the seductress, you know, we see over and over in further legends.
Right. And then so Lilith is associated with ancient Jewish texts. Lamastu is from Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
And they aren't certain if Lilith was a variation of Lamastu or if they both evolved from a third character.
Right.
But those are the two most ancient ideas of vampires that we have. Shortly after that, we can head on over to Greece.
Yeah.
And they feared a lot of vampire-like creatures.
Yeah, Lamia was another demoness, head and torso of a woman,
mm-hmm.
lower body of a snake.
Yeah.
And evidently this was one of Zeus's mortal lovers.
Yeah.
Zeus's wife did not take kindly to this.
Hera,
and she was like, "No, I'm going to make you go insane, lady, and eat all your children.
Yeah.
You're so crazy, you're going to eat your kids.
And then come to afterward."
That's right.
And when she did, she went so berserk, not in the Viking way.
Not berserker.
No, just straight up berserk.
Yeah.
That she became a monster.
Again, killing children.
Yeah, because she was jealous of other women who
That's
had
right.
children.
Who else?
They also had the Empusae.
Yes.
The daughters of Hecate, who was the goddess of witchcraft.
Yep, and they were shapeshifters for the first time, right?
Right. So, like, you have all these different cultures contributing to the vampire that we understand today, here or there. And it wasn't just the Greeks, it wasn't just the Mesopotamians. You also had India getting into the mix.
With the Rakshasa.
Right. Which was basically like a ghoul.
A shape-shifting ghoul who once again killed children.
Right. And same with the Vitala. But they were more like a zombie, if you ask me.
Yeah.
A demon who took possession of recently dead bodies
yeah.
to wreak havoc on the living? That's a zombie.
It sounds like zombie.
And then the Chinese also had their own thing. Kuei. Kuei.
Kuei. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You have to say it like that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the guy on NPR who always reports from China.
Oh, does he overpronounce?
He speaks normally, and then all of a sudden,
yeah.
I mean, he's doing it accurately, but it's like a little bit like Daniel Day-Lewis doing Lincoln. It's like, yeah, that's accurate, but do you know what you sound like?
I want to get rid of slavery. That was sort of like a jacked-up Kennedy. That's weird.
A little bit.
So
how do Kwai come about?
They are corpses who would rise from the grave,
mm-hmm.
kill again. And that happened when a person's lower spirit did not pass into the afterlife
yeah.
Because of bad things they did. So the Po was angered by
That's
this.
The lower spirit.
Yeah, and that would reanimate, basically, and say, you know what, I'm going to attack the living at night once again.
Because what else do I have to do? Nothing.
Well, that's a good way to exact revenge.
Just have to hang around here and
put
the wheelbarrow.
So all of these stories were floating around the world and eventually... through trade and things,
yep.
wound up in Europe.
Yeah, the first globalization, the Silk Roads, started bringing all these things together. And, yeah, they moved over to Europe.
And that's where they really sort of took off.
Yep.
I guess you could say.
And in the place that became the epicenter was Central Europe or Eastern Europe.
Yeah, Russia.
Yeah.
Early on with the Upir. And, again, Greek with the, oh, boy, Rykolakis or Vykolakis?
Rykolakis.
One of those
is good.
One of those. You can't start a word with four consonants.
Right.
One of them's got to be silent.
Yeah. And this kind of like was an offshoot of the Chinese conception of how a vampire became a vampire. The upir, which they think is the word that led to vampire or vampire,
yeah.
Was basically a person who during their life was a sinner,
mm-hmm.
unbaptized baby.
Yeah, which is really sad.
A vampire baby?
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. anyone who wasn't a Christian.
Yeah, practitioners of witchcraft especially, of course, for obvious reasons.
Because you'd already sold your soul to the devil.
Yeah.
So you were doomed.
You're like halfway there.
Right. So all of these factors combine to basically make you a loser in the afterlife, and you're going to come back. And families were, I guess, aware of this kind of thing. They knew that there was the possibility that, you know, Uncle Vigo, who had a big gambling problem, uh-huh. which the village looked down upon.
Right, yeah.
When he was alive, when he died, well, he was probably going to become an upir. And so if all of a sudden Uncle Vigo's, like, nephews start dying in a weird way, say of maybe a dread disease, the family would probably go dig up Uncle Vigo and do crazy stuff to his body.
Yeah, and one thing to point out here, this is, I think, the first time with the upir that we get the notion that they would go back to the grave to rest.
Oh, yeah, it's a big one.
On a regular basis, and that sets things up moving forward, kind of.
Right.
So, like you said, they would sometimes dig these bodies up, sometimes burn them, drive a stake through the heart.
Yeah.
They would really take care of this corpse. They would bury them face down sometimes.
Yeah.
So, like, if they tried to crawl out, they would be headed in the wrong direction.
That's pretty awesome.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Or
stupid vampire.
But stakes facing down. So if they tried to crawl up, they would stake themselves.
Yep. And this was about 1,000 years ago in Central Europe. This stuff, or Central or Eastern Europe, this stuff started to these beliefs started to come about.
Yeah.
That you could solve your vampire troubles by butchering the corpse of the suspected vampire.
Yeah.
And it started then, and it carried on anytime there was a vampire panic, which, interestingly, almost always attended an outbreak of some sort of disease.
Yeah, I could see that. Because once again, they're just trying to explain away.
Exactly.
Medical conditions.
Right. People would dig up corpses and, like, do crazy things to them. Like in Venice, they found a 16th century corpse that had a brick in its mouth.
Oh, really?
And they
that was
realized,
no accident.
No, it didn't fall in there. And then in the 1850s, there's this really cool article, Chuck, called The Great New England Vampire Panic.
Oh, yeah?
It was on the Smithsonian website recently. It is awesome. And in the 1850s in Connecticut, there was a tuberculosis outbreak, and people panicked and started digging up graves and just completely rearranging the people's bones or cutting out their hearts and burning them and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And this is the 1850s.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't the dark ages. Like, people were starting to have an understanding of, like,
sure.
disease.
Looks like the Salem witch trial, same deal.
Right. But 200 years later, or 150 years later, you
sure.
know? So, there was this big panic still as recently as the 1850s in the U.S. among, you know, folk who dug up their family members and, like, burned their hearts.
Those people are funny.
Yeah.
I call them undecided voters.
But those are the people that I'm talking about, though. They're doing the same thing or thinking the same things that the Assyrians did 4,000 years before. I just think that's so interesting.
It is. And backward.
Yeah.
So in Wallachia, Moldavia, mm-hmm. in Transylvania, which is now Romania, they had something called strigoi. And strigoi were, they were a little bit different because they were, they would go through different stages after rising from the grave. Like, at first they were just poltergeists and they were invisible spirits that would torment their family in the afterlife,
mm-hmm.
Or in their regular life, the strigoi's afterlife.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But then they would, as time passed, they would become visible, looking like they did in life, and they would still return and steal cattle and bring disease and all that stuff to their family.
Beg for food.
Yeah, why would they do this to their family? That's what I never got.
I think I saw later that metaphorically, it's basically a vampire lore is a life lesson.
Okay.
Like, don't be a drain on your family. Support your family. Take care of your parents in their old age. Like, you don't want to be a Strigoi.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure. I guess that makes sense. And Strigoi, or a Strigo, which I guess is the singular of the Strigoi, they would have to go back to the grave a lot, just like the Upir did. And they followed the same pattern. If they thought someone was a Strigo, they would exhume the body and take care of it the old-fashioned way.
Right.
And, but here's a little loophole. If you manage to survive for 7 years as a Strigo, then you're good to go. They're like, all right, you've got staying power. You just go do your Strigo thing.
Right. You are like the living dead. You no longer have to like return to your grave to rest. You're basically reborn.
Well done.
And apparently the Strigo couldn't, or the Strigoi couldn't make their way in their town after that seventh year, you know, because they weren't allowed to vote. There was all sorts of
all the cattle mutilations.
Right. So they would move to other towns and they would have secret meetings with other Strigoi. And, that's where the idea of vampires fraternizing came from.
Yeah. Hanging out.
Yeah.
Talking shop.
Yeah. Basically a secret culture of vampires existing outside of our awareness.
Yeah, remember like on Jerry Springer when that was on? Or it might still be on, I have no idea.
I think it is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Is it still the same crap?
Yeah.
He didn't take the high road at some point?
No.
I just remember back in the day they would have like those real vampires, the people that live the vampire lifestyle.
There's a video of it in this
is there?
In this article.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Those people.
Yeah. The guy looks like a cross between Marilyn Manson and Brandon Lee.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Kind of odd looking. He's got the contact lenses and everything going.
Yeah, and they'll shave down their fangs, like, for real, right? They'll file them down?
Yeah. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
So there's two types of Strigoi, right? You've got the Strigoi Mort.
Not Morty.
No. Mort as in dead.
Yes.
So this is the basically who we were just describing. And then the Strigoi View, which is the living, the person who's going to become a Strigo when they die.
Yeah, people that I feel very sorry for because they were probably just born with a bump. What are those called? The when you're born with a...
I was, like, really just racking my head.
With a vestige, like a partial tail?
Yeah. Vestigial tail?
Yeah, that's what that is.
No, there's a word for it. I can't remember. I'm so tired of doing this.
Well, let's call
how
it
many hours have we wasted combined saying, oh, I wish I could remember it?
Well, we just invented this off the top of our head, so don't beat yourself up.
Not atavans. Atavisms.
Yes, exactly right.
Atavisms.
So,
Ativan is some sort of drug.
Yeah, it is, actually. So if you're a poor baby born with a vestigial tail, a little bump on the top of your tailbone.
Or some sort of fetal membrane still attached to the head, which is called a caul.
Yeah, they would just call you a Strigoi View or Vu.
Right.
And you're sort of like, sorry, I was born with this bump. I'm not a vampire living, walking on the earth. They said, no, you are.
Right.
And if you have kids, then they're going to be Strigoi in the afterlife, and we'll have to destroy your body when you die.
And they did.
And they did so.
But I guess it's kind of nice that they didn't just kill the person while they were living. They just shunned them, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
The idea of a call, like, having some sort of special significance is, it goes beyond the vampire thing, too. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
Like, you're gifted with a second sight, or there's all sorts of, like, supernatural, paranormal folklore surrounding people born with a call.
Huh. Once again, people have proven to be stupid over the years.
So,
But this is where Vampire came in, right?
Yeah. The Strigoi, started to come to be called the Vampire, which is, again, from Upir in the Russian. And all of a sudden, the stage is set for the vampire legend to really take hold as it's taking shape.
Yeah, and, like, this is where pop culture came into play. Hysteria had set in, and so painters and artists and authors had this material that's pretty rich for the time.
Right.
All this hysteria is going on, so let's write a scary book about it.
Yeah.
And that's what Bram Stoker did.
Yeah, and he was, are you going with Bram? I go with Bram.
You go Bram?
Yeah.
Have you ever read it?
No, I saw the movie though. Hey, I heard the movie was a pretty faithful adaptation.
With the Coppola one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
The book is great though. I took a literature of horror class at Georgia.
Oh, neat.
And it was one of the cooler classes I took.
I'm sure.
We did Dracula and Frankenstein and like The House of Usher and then a bunch of short stories.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So Bram Stoker, also Abraham Stoker.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know until I read this. Did
what,
you know
that was his first name?
Yeah.
Yeah, just because of the class.
He was a theater manager and a novelist and also a really great researcher.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all this stuff from this vampire...
Hysteria.
Yeah, panic. From all this took place like hundreds of years before him. So, and I guess I don't know what inspired him exactly or where he saw it or where this all took place, but he didn't just go, oh, that's a pretty good idea, and wrote his book. Like, he went and did some serious research.
Yeah, supposedly he was inspired by, he was a personal assistant to this actor who ran the theater that he worked at.
Okay.
And supposedly Henry Irving was the guy's name, was the inspiration to write the book. And I don't know if that meant he was some jerk. He was like, I'm just going to personify you as a bloodsucker.
Right.
Or what? But, or maybe he just inspired him creatively. Who knows?
Right.
But I bet someone knows more about this than I do.
Oh, I'm sure.
So write in and tell me.
So Bram Stoker goes and he starts to do some research and pokes around and he finds a great place to set this vampire tale is in Transylvania, which is the heart of the Strigoi vampire. This is where everything that we just talked about came together. Wallachia, Transylvania, Romania is what we call it today.
Yeah.
He thought, well, this is just perfect. I'm going to set it there. And let's see if I can find somebody of that area who I can base this vampire character on. And he came up with a guy named Vladislav Bazarov.
Yeah, that's a creepy name, period.
Yeah.
But it would be even creepier. He was a prince, ruled Wallachia in the mid-1400s.
Mm-hmm.
Creepier is that his father was Vlad Dracul, Vlad the Dragon, or the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
And Vlad Jr. was referred to as Vlad Dracula, which is son of Dracul, or Vlad Tepes, or Vlad the Impaler, because even though it's not verified, supposedly he was a very fierce warrior who would impale his victims.
No, okay. I really feel like we should do the real Count Dracula episode sometime.
Yeah.
I wrote this awesome article on it, and it's verified.
What is it?
Was there a real Count Dracula?
Oh, yeah.
It's about Vlad Tepes, the Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, because he just borrowed the name and the title, right? He wasn't really based on this guy.
Who, Count Dracula?
Bram Stoker's
yes.
version, right?
Vlad Tepes was probably far, far worse than anything Bram Stoker wrote about Count Dracula. Way worse.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, his like it is verified. Like, yes, he had all sorts of guys who were against him and who published extensively all these books and pamphlets and all this stuff to smear his name.
Uh-huh.
But they got a lot of stuff right.
Yeah,
like he was into some horrible stuff. He killed a lot of people. He had a lot of people killed. His armies killed a lot of people. He's
probably like most rulers of the day.
He was. Worse. He was most likely worse than anybody else.
So he borrows this name and this title in social standing as an aristocrat. Aristocrat?
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. Aristocrat.
Yeah, you know, there's a naked woman in that one.
In the Aristocats?
Yeah.
The Disney cartoon?
Yeah, that's the one with the... Is that the one with the... No, I'm thinking of the Rescuers.
Oh, I remember that. There's a naked woman in the Rescuers?
Yeah. When they're flying through the city,
uh-huh.
If you watch it frame by frame, they pass by a window, and there is a photograph of, like, a woman standing in the window naked. And, like, you have to watch it, like, in you know, frame by frame. It's the only possible way to see it. But it's in there.
Oh, those animators.
Yeah. They were dirty. Dirty.
There's
dirty
also
men.
The Little Mermaid thing, the...
The phalluses?
Yeah, the hidden, not so hidden phallus.
Yeah, I'll bet that guy was like, no one's ever going to see this. And then he lost his job forever.
So so Stoker borrows this, the name, like I said, the social standing, says this would be a great setting. Let's throw it in Transylvania. Let's change a few things. Let's borrow from a bunch of different folklore. And let's say maybe you can't go out in the sunlight. And let's bring up the crucifixes now.
Right.
And let's make them really smart and charming. And
well, that was largely Bela Lugosi that did that.
Well, no, Bram Stoker's was totally like that.
I thought his was that he was like a withered, ugly old man.
You know, but he was still had like the seductive powers.
Oh, he was suave and all that too?
He was suave. So, well, because he changed ages, if I remember correctly.
Well, he does in the movie, and I've heard the movie's a pretty faithful adaptation.
It was also, I think, the first time where all of a sudden they didn't have any reflection, because most of the previous legends, they loved their reflection.
Yeah, apparently, not only were they in love with their own reflection and they could be lost for hours staring into a mirror, they were also supposedly obsessive-compulsive, as some like Eastern folklore goes, and one way to ward off vampires was to spread seeds outside of your house, because the vampire would be bound to count every single seed.
Yeah.
And if you put a little nail or a tack or something in there, when the vampire went pick that one up, it would prick itself and all drop all the seeds and forget where it was and start counting all over.
Say, oh, you got to start counting again.
And then you'd just be sitting inside laughing, drinking your ale.
Stupid vampires.
Yeah.
So
that was another difference. I'm sorry. We've been calling them stupid vampires, and up until the 19th century, like, you could make that case. Like, they were kind of dead, zombie-esque a little bit.
Yeah.
It was Stoker that introduced, like you say, not just all this other stuff, but the acute intelligence.
That's right.
This very smart, like, power of persuasion, almost hypnotic.
Yeah.
Svengali type.
And in True Blood, they have this thing they do called glamoring, which is kind of a silly name.
Uh-huh.
But it's almost like a charm, like a spell that they can put over you if you, like, lock eyes with one. And, you know, when you glamour them, they're, you know, basically in a hypnotic state. They're highly suggestible.
I get into a sexual way.
Oh,
really?
Well, in all kinds of ways. But, yeah, there's plenty of...
They usually are just, like, take off your pants. Did he say it like that? They point and say it in a creepy tone?
Yeah. See, you don't tell me you can't act. You could play the role as a vampire. Take off your pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got the job.
So let's do some voguing.
So you mentioned 1931's Bela Lugosi film, Dracula.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, where we get the cape and the I want to drink your blood and the sort of familiar modern vampire that, pop culturally speaking, that we're familiar with today.
Yeah. And one of the best songs ever, Bauhaus's Bela Lugosi's Dead.
Yeah.
Excellent.
1922 silent film, Nosferatu, with Max Schreck.
Yeah.
It's a little more true to the original creepy-looking guy.
What was the movie starring Willem Dafoe and...
About
John
the making
Malkovich?
Of Nosferatu?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
What is the name of that movie? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
Dude, that is such a good movie.
Yeah.
I want to see that movie again.
I do too, actually.
It's a great one. The ending is just awesome.
Yeah.
What is it? Shadow of the Vampire.
Thank you, Jerry.
For
that live... correction. Anne Rice then came along and...
Nothing happened in between
Bela
Lugosi and Anne Rice.
But Anne Rice definitely brought things more into the forefront as far as this range of emotions and these really complex characters.
Yeah.
I didn't think the books were very good, but it's just not my bag.
Oh, yeah?
No, I read the first one, and it's just not my thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was not good. It's just not my thing.
I'm with you.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, of course, classic. Not so great movie. Great TV series.
Are you out of your mind? You didn't like the movie?
I didn't think it was very good, no.
Oh, you're crazy.
You thought the movie was good?
I love that movie.
Well, that's good.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, I thought it really became itself when the cast changed.
I love that movie.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Have you seen that South Park where, like, all the kids start becoming, like, vampires, all the good kids?
Uh-uh.
It's, like, very trendy and hip to be like, a vampire and to give yourself a new name and everything. And they drink Clamato.
Oh, I love Clamato.
Yeah. You're in the minority, buddy.
That's the secret to my famous Bloody Mary.
I know. You've told me.
Yeah.
It's a good South Park, Chuck.
I'll check it out.
Where are we now?
Should we talk about psychic vampires a little bit?
I guess.
All right. These are people in modern times that claim that they crave and feed on others' energy, their psychic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim to be vampire-ish or vampiric.
Vampire-esque.
Vampire-esque, in that they will not, if they do not do this, then they will not have feel like they have fed on, you know, sustenance. Like, that is their sustenance, is other people's psychic energy.
Gotcha.
And it also goes back, it's, you know, modern people claim this, but it goes back, you know, thousands of years, this phenomenon does. It's nothing new.
Well, I actually think that it may have given rise to vampire lore as we understand it now.
Yeah, and it's also a metaphor if someone, you know, someone can call someone a psychic vampire if they're just a drain as a person.
Yeah.
You know those people?
Oh, I do. I do. Energy vampires.
That's right.
Not to be confused with the other kind of energy vampire, which is like your coffee maker.
Yeah, these things that are left on all night.
So there's we kind of touched on it earlier, the idea of why, where we would have gotten vampire legends. People use it to explain phenomenon that we didn't understand before. There was such a thing as like germ theory, right?
Right.
So you have like Lamastu being blamed for SIDS and miscarriages, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you have a couple other diseases that we've come to understand that they're like, you know what? We've never really definitively linked this to vampire lore, but I'll bet you this gave rise to it.
It probably didn't help.
So like what?
Porphyria. Is that how you pronounce that?
Porphyria.
Porphyria? All right. We'll go with that.
Have you ever seen The Others?
Nicole Kidman? Oh, is that what those kids had?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. It's a rare disease. Irregularities in the production of Hemi, which is in hemoglobin.
Heme. Yeah.
I like Hemi. That thing got a Hemi?
That's an engine, yeah.
And basically what you're going to be sensitive to sunlight. You're going to have bad stomach pains.
Mm-hmm.
You may be delirious. Back in the day, one prescription may have been to drink blood.
So I would say that's probably a dead giveaway right there.
And have you seen pictures?
Yeah.
Of people stricken with this? Creepy looking.
Yeah.
Their teeth can be like red or black, and their gums can be red and black.
Which is, I think, probably another reason why they linked that to that.
And it's hereditary, so there were places where there was more of this happening than other places.
Right.
Which would also lend itself to the whole vampire thing.
And feeding on your family.
Yes.
Same with tuberculosis. Like when people were kind of spread out. Except your family,
uh-huh.
And there were 19 of you,
yeah.
And you all lived in one house.
Yeah.
If one of you had TB, probably the rest of you were going to catch TB, and a lot of you were going to die from it.
Yeah.
And whoever was the first one to die of this was probably the original vampire who was feeding on the other, and you're probably the one who's going to be dug up and have your heart cut out and burned.
Yeah, but at that point, who cares?
And then there's another disease called catalepsy. Which is associated with epilepsy.
Yeah, this one is freaky.
Did you ever see that Twilight Zone where, I can't remember what actor it was. It may have been the professor from, Gilligan's Island.
Oh, yeah?
Where he's in a car wreck and he's paralyzed. And the whole thing is just him talking to himself in his head, like,
he's
begging these people, yeah, to not bury him.
Wow.
Because he's not dead. And, it's a great episode.
So is he cataleptic?
No, he was kind of, like you said, locked in.
It was Twilight Zone.
catalepsy is a specific neurological disorder, like I said, associated with epilepsy, where your muscles just freeze up. And an episode like this can last for days.
Yeah.
And your heart rate slows and your respiration slows and you're alive. And God knows what your brain's doing, but you're alive during this time.
Yeah.
But, you know, prior to, say, embalming, you may have just been taken for dead and put in the ground and you had to dig your way out and go back home.
Yeah, and it's also associated with schizophrenia. So you're sitting around the dinner table and Uncle what?
Vigo.
Uncle Vigo.
Remember, liked to gamble.
He comes in 3 days after you buried him, brushing dirt off his overalls, having a schizophrenic episode, and you're going to put a stake through his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you're smart.
Which is just not fair, because after an experience like that, it's like, why would you wait? Why not let fate kill this man before he goes through this horrific cataleptic experience and then it all end with a stake through the heart? Just let him get hit by a truck with a Hemi or something ahead of time.
And then I'm not so sure about this suggestion, but it might carry a little weight that what happens after a regular human body dies might have fed into this a little bit.
I would say so.
Fingernails and hair continue growing. So this is like if they dig you back up, they're like, look, the fingernails are long, the hair's grown, they're bloated because you're full of, gases expanding. Mm-hmm. So let's cut them open and all this fluid drains out and say, see, they've been growing their hair and fingernails and feeding on others' bodily fluids.
They're alive.
They're, well, or undead.
Right.
But,
I could see that. Like they're going back and resting. And, like, they obviously have gorged themselves. Look at their stomach. It's all distended.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it was probably, like, the nail in the coffin on their beliefs. Like, this is all absolutely correct.
Yeah. I could see that, though, I guess. And then the notion of the vampire bat came along later on where the vampire could shapeshift into bats and sometimes wolves.
Right.
Although in Twilight, wolves and vampires are on opposite sides.
Yeah.
I said I wouldn't mention it again.
Yeah, I know.
And there I went. But the whole thing of the vampire bat was just like a creepy, real vampire bats are docile creatures, and they might drink like the blood of a cow, but they're not attacking people.
No.
That was all for
they're as harmless as vampire literature babies.
Yeah.
You know?
What are some of your favorite movies, Josh?
Oh, vampire movies?
No, just comedies.
Like DC Cab.
Yeah.
Dr. Detroit. I would say probably the best of all time, in my opinion, is Lost Boys.
It definitely has a kitsch value now.
That is a great movie.
It doesn't hold up super well, though. Have you seen
it
lately?
No, I haven't seen it in a while.
In the ways that other 80s movies don't.
Really? Because that was like a cool movie.
Yeah.
Echo and the Bunnymen cover the doors in it. Come on.
Thou shall not kill.
Yeah, that's a weird one. It's a strange song.
Near Dark, did you ever see that one?
No, I don't think so.
1987, Bill Paxton. Mm-mm. And that one guy, Lance Henriksen. Mm-hmm. They're like these modern vampires traveling in an RV through the desert and killing people. Really good.
I have not seen that.
Near Dark is excellent.
What about First Bite with George
Hamilton?
Yes.
First Bite, was that what it was
called? Yeah, he's like a disco Dracula.
Yeah, I remember that. Vampire's Kiss was funny. Nick Cage.
I never saw that one.
That was good. I thought the original Fright Night, granted it was the 80s again, but for me, it was pretty good back in the day.
I haven't seen that.
Kronos, have you seen that?
Nope.
Guillermo del Toro?
I don't...
Good one.
Think I've seen it.
And then, of course, Let the Right One In.
That's a great one.
Both versions, to me, very good.
Oh, really? I heard the American version was meh compared to the original.
I thought they were both pretty great.
I'll check it out then.
You know? They didn't, like, definitely didn't ruin it
by
Americanizing it. And then there are, of course, the bad ones like Van Helsing, Wes Craven's Dracula 2000.
Yeah.
Blood Rain, R-A-Y-N-E. I mean, there's lots and lots of bad vampire movies.
Sure. Dracula Dead and Loving It.
That was good, though.
Do you know how many emails we're going to get from people that say, like, you forgot about this one?
Yeah. Let's just say there are hundreds of vampire movies. Mm-hmm. There's TV shows now, mm-hmm. The Vampire Diaries, True Blood, which I mentioned, which is sort of good again after falling off the rails, in my opinion.
Okay.
And Twilight Breaking Dawn, Part 2.
What is your problem? It's twice.
In theaters near you. Oh, actually, the 79 Dracula with Frank Langella, that was good.
Did he play Dracula?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, he was good.
Oh, yeah, okay. I could see him. I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking of the right person.
And then if you're into old movies, you know, you can't go wrong with Bela Lugosi or Nosferatu.
Yeah.
Take some time, watch an old movie. That's what I say.
Yeah. That's pretty much your life coaching.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
Take some time and watch an old movie, says Chuck.
Yeah. Watch something in black and white for a change.
Also, while we're on this kind of scary-esque topic, you want to plug somebody real quick?
Yeah, I think we have another horror fiction selling his stuff, right?
Right. As we said, we would plug people who sent in their stuff for our horror fiction contest and who went on to publish stuff. And one of the guys, Christopher Kelly, who wrote the very cool short story Variable, took us up on that. And he says that he has a creepy novella about two boys whose father tries to kill them called Abraham Road, not Bram Road. He says that it's what would have happened if H.P. Lovecraft rewrote Of Mice and Men, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's available on Kindle. You can go find that on Amazon.com, Abraham Road ebook. And then he also has a collection called I Held My Breath As Long As I Could. 23 stories of the strange, the sinister, and the literary. You can get that on Amazon as well. So check those out. Christopher Kelly, thanks for sending in your work. We liked it a lot. And remember, anybody else who has published and entered our horror fiction contest, we want to say thanks by letting everybody know about your stuff.
Agreed.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
If you want to know more about vampires, man, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yes.
You can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. It will bring up a bunch of cool stuff, including who is the real Count Dracula, this vampire article written by Tracy Wilson, which is a great one.
Oh, Tracy wrote that?
Yeah. Couldn't you tell? It was pretty thorough.
Yeah.
And then also another one I liked a lot was a Hungarian countess, the world's most prolific serial killer. She's like the female Dracula, Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome stuff. Type that in the search bar, and it will bring all this great stuff up. And since I said search bar, it's time for listener mail.
All right, Josh, we're going to call this trivia plug. We went to New York for Comic-Con, and we had one of our trivia nights there. And one of the things that we were required to do is, and want to do, is read the names of the trivia winners. And so I got emails from them and the runner-up team.
Yeah.
Because they were cool. And I'm going to read them all. This is from the winner, Kyle Janusz. Or Janusz. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Thanks, guys, for hosting the event. As an avid SYSK listener, our team, Steve Holt, had a great time. Their team name was Steeple.
Yeah, I remember.
We were made up of mainly former Midwesterners, which gave us a good advantage in the Great Lakes question. We had three girls in fashion, Caitlin Grummel, Monica Lang, and Amy Geidel. We also had three teachers, Dan Farrell, Michael Rakowski, and myself, Kyle Janish. And my twin, who does social work, Mike Janish.
Yeah.
And my friend who seems to always be working for a pyramid scheme, Micah Sterling. So those were the winners there. And he says the fashion expertise did not come in handy this time, but we were prepared for anything except for the Kevin Smith movies category, which I wasn't a fan of.
It was rough.
They were far behind coming in the last question, but wagered it all and won.
It's crazy. That's how it goes at one of our trivia events.
Yeah. So Kyle and his brother Mike, remember meeting them? They were buddies with Joe Randazzo.
Yeah.
And he says, thanks for hosting and thanks for the sweet t-shirts.
Yeah.
And then the runner-ups.
Runners-ups. Sorry, the ghost of William Sapphire just ran through me.
Thanks for hosting the super fun trivia night at the Cutting Room. And boy, by the way, thank you, Cutting Room.
Yeah.
That place is amazing and very generous in hosting us. And it is back up and running after redoing the inside. Mm-hmm. And it is really nice. So give them some love if you live in New York. I'm a longtime listener, 4 years of pure love. And I recently got my boyfriend, David, hooked as well. And it has been a nerdy bonding experience for us. Anyway, we decided to come up from Virginia. We came up from Virginia for this.
That's a long drive.
We met some awesome people in line and formed Team Phil. Our lovely teammates were Paul Nagowski, Leah Tallman, Jen Nelson, Charlie Tran, David Burry, and two others who skipped out early. And myself, who is Natalie David. And Natalie is the one who brought us the Mike's on, pants off t-shirts.
Oh, yeah. Thank
you for those. Not only was that super nice, but they sat in the table next to us, and I was able to talk a lot of smack with them. And so I said I would read about them on the show.
That's just how it goes at one of our trivia events. We bring people together. Chuck talks smack, like, directly to you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
So Natalie David says thanks a lot and cheers, and I hope you enjoy the shirts and all that good stuff.
Yeah. We met the Convo Kings, who we've been in touch with.
That's right.
They have a podcast of their own called appropriately, the Convo Kings.
Very nice guys.
That's worth checking out, too.
Yeah, so it was great fun meeting everyone, and it's always fun. I enjoy rubbing elbows like that. Nice people.
Yeah. What else?
Got nothing else.
All right. If you have had a good experience because of stuff you should know, whether it's at one of our trivia events, standing in line for one of our trivia events, or nothing at all, you can tweet to us, right, at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us a good old-fashioned email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.